very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
one, but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me, as always, is
Catfish.
Oh, yeah.
You can hit me up at CJGman67. Bubba, it has been a while since we have talked about Joffrey, our king. And, you know, we were prescient, I think.
How so?
Well, because we started doing this podcast and people are like, why are you talking about Joffrey? Mm-hmm. There were a lot of deniers. A lot of people were hostile towards Joffrey.
Oh, yeah. They were unstraightening the record. And so we had to be non-unstraighteners so the record would be non-unstraightened.
And what has happened since the last time we did this podcast?
In August of 2016. It is currently May of 2017. Whoa.
A Joffrey-like figure has ascended to the throne. I mean, the presidency of the United States. In fact, just a few weeks ago, George R. R. Martin compared the leader of our country
and the free world.
Well, I think the rest of the free world is going to say. Even Angela Merkel today said we're going to have to maybe pick up the slack here.
She's acting a bit Daenerys. She is.
So. Yeah. The world has come to Joffrey.
Oh, wow.
You know, Joffrey didn't go to the mountain. The mountain came to Joffrey.
Oh, that's incredible. So August of 2016, it's now May of 2017, and there's still no new Game of Thrones. And so we have had way too long a break.
We have had too long a break. I don't even know. I haven't seen you in 8 months.
I know. I look rough. It's been a hard 8 months on poor sweet Bubba. Guys, we are back, and to celebrate the upcoming, still about 2 months away, the upcoming Game of Thrones Season 7, we're going to have 7 podcasts to count down to Game of Thrones Season 7.
Wow, that is so, I'm so excited. That's about one a week until it starts.
Get ready.
Wow, one thing we usually do is we give out prizes to our loyal listeners.
To who?
Well, they're you might remember them as Double L's.
Oh, yeah, that's a certain thing. Obviously, we're rusty. Yes, hold on. Let's start this over.
Okay.
We like to give out prizes to the people I like to refer to as Double L's.
Double L's?
Yes, that's our loyal listeners.
Didn't I just say that, though?
Very rusty. And so, get this, Catfish.
I'm getting it.
Game of Thrones is back.
Right.
There are going to be 7 new episodes in Season 7.
That's an odd number.
And every single episode of Game of Thrones, where we do our recap and reviews, we're going to give away a prize
to
our Double L's.
Our Double L's?
You just said it a minute ago. Loyal listeners.
Oh, I thought it was Little Lyanna's.
Little Lyanna Mormont's, possibly. But guess
what?
So
wait a second.
What?
It's been a while since we did this podcast, but I seem to remember at the end of last season us giving away a boatload of stuff all at once.
We did.
We're not going to do that now?
No. Every new episode of Game of Thrones, our review and recap episodes, we're going to give away a prize, and we want our Double L's. This is how you enter into the contest.
How do you get a submission to this contest?
Well, in the olden days, meaning last year and every year previously, we used to ask for iTunes reviews. Now we're up in the USA iTunes store over 100 reviews. I feel like we've reached our benchmark there. So now we're going to have kind of new ways you can enter special prizes.
And how are? What are those new ways?
Well, first off, Double L's.
Double L's?
Loyalist.
Oh, right.
We're Double R.
Double R.
Really rusty. So the way you can enter is that every time after our podcasts come out and we tweet out, for example, hey, there's a brand new hashtag Joffria podcast out now.
And then we have a link to it.
Mm-hmm. If you're on Twitter, if you retweet that, or if you're on Facebook and you share our Facebook post, our Facebook page is facebook.com/PP podcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcast, plural. So if you retweet, that's one entry into a contest.
Okay.
If you share our Facebook post, that's a second entry into the contest.
Got it.
We want people to do our advertising for us. If you do that, you're going to be entered to win a prize. and we're giving away 7 prizes, one for each new episode. This is incredible.
I've done a lot more work for a lot less good prizes.
Yeah, we have got some great prizes. We went to the Game of Thrones live concert experience.
Ooh.
That was with conductor-composer Ramin Djawadi. We got to talk to him. We got to meet him. We entered this special backstage area where they give us special exclusive prizes, so we're going to be giving those away. We've also got some T-shirts. We've got some really exclusive giveaways like HBO For Your Consideration DVDs. These are special things, and so we want you to help do the painful work that we do of advertising the show.
I am the king! I'm telling mother!
And people, if you like Ash vs. Evil Dead, listen to Catfish and I on
Ash
vs.
Evil Dead
vs.
Bubba
vs.
Catfish.
That's a very fun podcast. If you like The Strain, check out Mork, Catfish and I on the Got Your Milk, FX's The Strain podcast. If you're into the revival of Twin Peaks, which is happening right now, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to YouTube, search Twin Peaks, The Gifted in the Dam. That's Mork and I with occasional guest shots from Catfish reviewing David Lynch and Mark Frost's revival of Twin Peaks.
People are loving that podcast. That is our breakout, the Double P Podcast Network. That's our breakout podcast.
Let me tell you, it is close. It hasn't done it quite yet, but it is close to being at our Joffrey podcast levels of downloads. Well, these Game of Thrones fans, these Twin Peaks fans, they are hardcore. Love it.
Well, David Lynch better watch out or he's going to get some Double J.
Double J.
Joffrey justice.
Plus, in the coming weeks, we're going to be doing all sorts of fun stuff to count down to season 7. We're going to be reviewing that Game of Thrones live concert experience. We're going to be talking about Thrones, the musical comedy show that first debuted at the Edinburgh Fringe Press. Created, one of the creators was my good friend Al Samuels. We're going to review that. We went and saw that. Plus, we're going to be doing a lot of our series Double B.
Double B?
Well, Double B is what I like to use when I talk about book bitching.
Oh, yeah.
And we have just more stuff to get you hyped for the return of Game of Thrones. On today's podcast, we're going to do our world famous or world infamous Season 7 trailer frame by frame breakdown.
That is a frame by frame breakdown. And so what we have to do is figure out how many exact frames there are, and we're going to spend 1 minute with each of those frames.
Each frame.
So I think it's about 2,000 frames, probably.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so 24 frames a second.
No, but the 30 frames. Okay, we go through this every year. But we'll get to that into a second. Plus,
this is a 1,000-minute podcast.
It is. Plus, we're going to do something I call a septuple S.
Septuple S?
Yeah, well, septuple S, Catfish, is what I like to use.
I love how
use,
you always set it up, huh?
Is what I like to call, what I like to use when I'm referring to a Season 7 super secret spoilery Sansa scene.
Wow, that's amazing. It probably would have been more amazing if it hadn't been preceded by one that was pretty good.
That's true.
Folks, just power through with us. We've got some fun today. And besides the trailer breakdown, which is 1,000 minutes of entertainment.
King. Now, Catfish.
Yes, Bubba.
On that last podcast back in August of 2016.
Yeah.
We did a lot of fun things. We did a Double B section there about Daario 2.0. But we started it off with one of my favorite things, a Grandmaster Pycelle POV chapter.
Oh, yeah.
We had some great feedback. Somebody wrote in on our Facebook page and said this may have been the greatest thing they had ever heard. And then somebody else wrote in and said, every time you guys do these POV chapters and your silly scenes, I want to smash my MP3 player against a wall.
Well, if they have an MP3 player, I agree. Smash it against the wall and get something else.
So if you happen to be the type of person who doesn't like our exclusive scenes and POV chapters, I want you to go ahead and hashtag
skip ahead.
Exactly right, because the septuple scene is really might break your MP3 player again. And it's about Joffrey's betrothed, Sansa Stark.
Oh, wow. There's another little harlot. Now, we have had some POV chapters of her before.
Oh, yeah.
So just for some people who may have, for some reason, not gotten them
right. Or
have forgotten, George R. R. Martin in these hidden chapters shows kind of a different side to Sansa than we see in the series.
Oh, yeah.
We know, first of all, she's lascivious.
She sure is.
And she likes her alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She is a double L.
Double L.
Lovely Lush.
Lovely Lush. She is indeed.
And they've kind of removed that from the show, which is odd.
It's sad. I see what they're trying to do there with a balance. George R. R. Martin has a thing where, you know, he's like the world is sort of full of grays, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That people are, you know, not all good or all bad. But,
right. You
know, he's tried to show here, I mean, those showrunners have tried to make her kind of a little bit goody two-shoes.
Right.
So to show in contrast with the strength that Joffrey brings.
Exactly. Exactly right. So this scene,
mm-hmm.
I imagine it could take place in season 7. So it could be a spoiler, but there's also a chance that the showrunners were afraid to go to the true heart of the characters.
Okay. All right.
And so, folks, we bring you to Winterfell in the North. In walks Littlefinger. Every time I'm faced with a decision, I close my eyes and see the same picture. Whenever I consider an action, I ask myself, will this action help to make the picture a reality? Pull it out of my mind and into the world. I only act if the answer is yes. A picture of me on the Iron Throne, and you by my side, Sansa. Oh, it's a pretty picture. Pretty. You know what else is pretty? Look at this pretty bottle of wine. Ooh, wonderful. Sansa, my love, you can't drink every bottle of wine in Winterfell. Oh, MSG. Oh, my seven gods. If I have to marry you, I better start pre-gaming. Whoop. What? But, my lady, you must keep your voice down. I need a lot of wiki-wiki wine. Holla. A moment, please. We're busy.
What's going on in there?
Party.
Forgive me, little Lady Lyanna Mormont. Lady Sansa and I are busy here in this room.
My men were butchered in the Battle of the Bastards, but you refused the call.
If we could just have a moment.
You swore allegiance to the North, Lord Maelish. But in our hour of greatest need, you refused the call.
Oh, snap.
All right, come in, come in. First of all, Lady Mormont, it's Lord Baelish.
I could have sworn it was male-ish.
That's what my Aunt Lyanna said.
Lady Mormont, how may I be of service to you?
The men are deciding what they want for supper.
Supper? We need more, wait for it, wine.
Yes, yes. Yes, it is time for supper, and what of it?
The men want goat. They always want goat.
And is there a problem with goat?
I want chicken.
But if you've been outvoted, my lady.
Lord Curwen, his father was skinned alive by Ramsay Bolton. Still, he refused the call.
Are you going to pull this routine every single time?
But House Mormont remembered. The North remembers how I love chicken. We know no supper, but the delicious chicken in the North, whose name is Supper. It's my supper from this day until my last day.
You don't have to shout.
I don't care if he's a rooster. That chicken's blood will run through my veins.
Seven hells.
Look at this bottle of wine up on the shelf. Oh, man. Somebody grab me a chaos.
What are you saying, Sansa?
Well, you told me, Littlefinger. You said that chaos was a ladder, so if I want to...
What did she say, small hands?
Nothing. It's not small hands. It's Littlefinger, my lady.
That's not what Sansa said.
Now, if the kitchen, if it doesn't have any chickens...
My stomach died for Jon Snow, the White Wolf. I didn't think I'd eat again in my lifetime during the long battle of Winterfell, but I was wrong. Chicken will avenge the Red Wedding. It is the dinner in the North. There will be more fights to come, and House Mormont will stand behind House Stark as we have for thousands of years, and I will eat chicken. Chicken for supper. Chicken for supper. Chicken for supper.
Fine. I shall ask Jon Snow.
The King in the North. The King in the North.
Yes, fine.
Here, Littlefinger. I had the Maester make this for you.
It's Littlefinger, my Sansa. What is it?
The Maester called it a lozenge. He said it could help with your throat.
What do I do with it? I just suck on it?
Yeah, baby. Suck it.
My throat is clear. I haven't had such a clear throat since season 1. I feel... Sansa, you've killed me.
Valar Morghulis, bitch. All men must die, especially men who keep me from my intended, my betrothed,
His Grace King Joffrey. Come on out, my king.
That's right, vile traitor.
I'm actually alive. I faked my death.
As did I, Your Grace.
Grand Maester Pycelle, how are you still even alive?
Well, it's a long story. Long story, Lady Stark. It began early. When I was broke my fast, I had two poked-edged in cranberry sauce with bottled milk and lots of cheese from down in the High Garden area, as well as fish pulled from a river that was bubbling over a brook. I had some fine Dornish wine.
Oh, skip ahead.
That's what Catfish said.
That's what Catfish said, milady.
Okay, now do it as Pycelle.
That's what Catfish said.
Whoa, now that scene may have just spoiled all of season 7 because it showed that Joffrey was coming back and...
But we knew that.
But Pycelle coming back too?
Wow.
Shocker. And Littlefinger died.
Yeah, well, it is a little bit unusual. They usually don't have, when big people die, it's sort of a little bit more public than this. So I like how they mix it up because we expect some big, huge death for Littlefinger.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's kind of a lot going on there. Littlefinger dies. Joffrey comes back.
Lady Lyanna gets chicken. It covers the gambit.
And not only that, but I like how Littlefinger kind of breaks the fourth wall there, talking about his throat not being that clear since season 1.
It was odd.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you get these scenes that are secret scenes. You could end the entire podcast with that when I go, and now do it as myself.
All right, now, Catfish, it is time to get into the Game of Thrones Season 7 trailer, which just came out a couple of days ago, and everybody has seen it. Wow.
Wow, I read somewhere that it had 61 million views in the first 24 hours.
That is hardcore.
That is a lot of people. So you have got to believe that HBO is very happy with this, and they figure that at least some people, a.k.a. you and me, are paying for it. We might be the only two people paying for it, and everybody else is stealing the credit out of it.
Is borrowing our HBO Go login, that's
Well,
true.
All right. Or just outright stealing it. It is the most stolen show.
Oh, yeah. Most stolen show in the last few years. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're talking crazily about doing four different tangentially related shows.
Six. We love Game of Thrones. Keep them coming is what I say.
Okay.
Now, Catfish.
Yes.
Let's take our double L's. Our loyal listeners.
Got
behind
it.
The curtain here a bit on the Joffrey podcast.
Ooh, behind the scenes.
So it was just 2 years ago.
Yes.
When we decided to do a trailer breakdown. And I thought because so many people wrote where the headline would say a frame by frame analysis. And I thought, well, why don't we do it? They're not really doing it frame by frame. So we'll do a little spin on it where we actually look at each individual frame and we comment on them.
Right.
And somehow it's become one of our most favorite recurring segments here on the Joffrey
podcast.
Well,
that's because if you really do it frame by frame, and I believe I've finally wrestled this to the ground.
Oh, boy.
We've had so many math problems on this.
All right, so let's do it.
So this trailer is 2 minutes and 4 seconds long. That's 124
perfect.
Seconds.
That's 124 seconds.
And we assume...
No, this is where you're going to mess it. This is where you mess it up every time.
We assume there's 24 frames a second.
No. See, this is your problem.
Okay, talk to me.
We talk about this every time.
Okay.
They shoot the show.
Right.
They shoot the show 24 frames a second.
Got it.
But when it comes to your television, televisions here in the United States broadcast at 60 feels a second, 30 frames a second.
Okay. All right. So that's fine.
And
we have 3,720 seconds. Sorry, 3,720 frames
feel?
Now
no, that's
in this.
Frames, not feels. Because there's 60 feels a second.
Right, no, I put
there
the 30.
30 frames
so
a
we've
second.
Got 3,720 frames to talk about.
That's it.
So that's it. But I said this is only going to be 1,000 minutes long, okay?
Okay.
So that means we have to talk about every frame.
Right.
We.
How do we always have trouble with this?
We only have 1,000 minutes to talk about almost 4,000 frames. That means we have to cover a frame every 15 seconds.
Okay. So now what I love about the trailer is last year's trailer started on black. And so for many of the first 10 frames were like black, black. Okay, it's starting to dissolve up from black, and we could see little things. This trailer is already starting off better than any trailer ever, meaning it doesn't start on black. It just automatically cuts.
Boom, let's not mess around.
The HBO logo.
Yes.
And it looks like it were coming into a courtyard, and it's a beautiful courtyard, we assume, in King's Landing, based on who in 30 frames from now is going to step in.
Oh, there's still some courtyards, unscorched courtyards in King's Landing? That's good to know.
These are the non-wildfire adjacent
There's like five courtyards left.
Well, if this was what I like to call Double H. House Hunters on HGTV, where you'd be like, I need some prime real estate in King's Landing. I have this much to spend. And they'd be like, well, it's a fixer-upper.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
It's Sept of Baylor Ashes adjacent.
Well, you'd say this. There's a lot of opportunity for you to design it however you want. It's kind of a blank slate in places.
All right, so now I'm on the fifth frame, which is identical to frames 1 through 4. And this courtyard is slightly out of focus. The HBO logo is there.
Get out of there, HBO logo.
But it looks like there's some human beings who are blurry down at the bottom of this. That's pretty special.
It's a group of people.
We assume.
Probably, I'm going to assume Joffrey disciples.
You mean Lannister guards? Are they Lannister guards or are they part of the Queen's Guard now? We will have to go.
It's a third group.
A third group.
People who are solely devoted to Joffrey and his return. Like we are.
Okay. Well, I can really hear you smack that gums. And next up,
sorry about that.
Is the subtitle say footsteps approaching? So we know someone is coming. Now,
is his name Winter?
Edgar Winter is coming. And one thing I want to talk about this trailer in general, as we're now 50 frames in, and the HBO logo is starting to blur and out of focus and dissolve out, is that the season 7 poster seems to be focused on a character we call the Night's King, the Night King. That great guy up in the north of the wall, the White Walker, the other, who, you know, is an evildoer who believes that he is the king of the north and maybe brings Winter with him. He is like the focus of the poster. But he's not in this trailer at all, which I find very bizarre.
I find it very bizarre because, as I've always said,
yeah,
I felt in the books they do not a great job of showing that Winter is coming and that's the real threat, and all we're doing is focusing on the people who actually live, breathe, and eat.
Right.
And so, again, I think that that's what is going to be focused on this season, and then the last season, presumably, would be when you're fighting the White Walkers. So even though they're emphasizing him...
Well, he's not in the trailer is what I'm saying. They're emphasizing him in the poster, not in the trailer.
Right.
So it makes me wonder, and I've read a few spoilers, but I won't try to touch on those at all in this trailer review, but that makes me wonder if, once again, he's not going to have much of a role. Like, it feels like for the last couple of seasons, he shows up in one episode and then you never see him again. So possibly here in these 7 episodes of season 7, we're going to see him once.
Right. Well, what I...
Why can't the guy get bumped up to the A-list?
Kind of following what I was saying before about how I feel like that threat is not emphasized in the books, although it is emphasized, I feel, more in the show,
okay.
It still feels as if that's not the major threat and we're still focused on the squabbles between the earthly folks.
Oh, yeah. Now, here, it looks like we're about 50 frames into this trailer.
Because, let's be honest about it. All these people squabbling, the whole thing.
Yeah.
None of them are as dangerous to the continuing existence of life as the White Walkers are.
No.
And all they're really doing is winnowing their own ranks of people who can fight against the White Walkers.
Or that's the glass half empty approach. They're catfish in the glass.
The dragon glass half empty?
The dragon glass half empty. In the dragon glass half full thought
tell
process,
me,
since the dead turn into zombies, and human beings can turn into whites for the White Walkers army, you could take it positively and say, well, we're getting rid of a lot of people. These people will die in the south. They'll never go north, and therefore the Night's King can't ever turn.
Oh,
them.
I see what you're saying. I thought when you said the dragon glass was half full that you were arguing against yourself. So these are people who'll never be turned.
Right, they can't be turned because they're dead in the south.
They're worm food and not revenants,
right,
under the Night King's watch. Okay, I like it.
Now, about 50 frames into this trailer, we see a head. Just a barely oval appear on the right side of the screen. And
well,
then
it comes from the left.
From the left side of the screen. Apologies. Yes, left side of the screen. And it's entering the screen. And as I go, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five
now,
Mississippi
it appears,
scenes, it appears that it's Queen Cersei.
Right. I was going to say that it looks at first like a young boy because of the haircut, but that's the haircut that Cersei is rocking these days.
Which is true in Westeros just as it's true here on Earth in the real world. Somebody gets popular and everybody wants to do that haircut. Joffrey had his haircut this way and now
exactly.
People are just copycats.
Exactly.
Getting a Joffrey
she's hoping,
cut.
She's hoping someone will see her from behind and be like, Joffrey, Joffrey, Lord Joffrey. And she turns around and just for a moment she's so sad because she sees the light go out in the person's eyes before they're like, oh yes, Queen Cersei, yes, I love you because you're Joffrey's mother.
She went to Fantastic Samwell's and asked for the Joffrey haircut, and it looks good on her. Now, one thing that I love about this, she comes in, it's a complete silhouette. She's in the dark. There are two things I love about this. She's in the dark, entering towards the light.
Got it.
But number two, you can tell that her outfit she's wearing has like fur on it. I've been saying that one of the things I do like about the books is that starting in about the fourth book on, places like King's Landing and stuff, you know, it started to get a chill. It was autumn. They could feel winter coming.
Right.
And it hasn't felt like, on the show at least, even in King's Landing, that people have felt it's really cold yet. But if Her Grace, Queen Cersei, is wearing fur, and we assume this courtyard is in King's Landing, it looks like winter has come, or cold has come to King's Landing. I like that.
I kind of feel we got a hint last season on the show that it was cold.
What do you mean by that? In King's Landing? What do you mean?
Because Cersei decided she needed to warm things up with the wildfire.
She had a bonfire. That's You only do that when it's cold outside.
Exactly, exactly. You don't give her enough credit.
Now, when she's coming towards this courtyard, as we go now about 20 frames past that, we can see that the courtyard has like a blue flooring. We're going to later see that that seems to be a map they're creating, a map of Westeros they're creating on the courtyard floor.
Oh, don't ruin it for me. I thought she might have had a new pool installed.
Cuts to black for one frame, two frame, three frame. Fourth frame, it starts to fade up from black. We see some spears. We see some Unsullied, and we're panning across our boy Grey Worm. And to show that winter is coming once again, the Unsullied have always had kind of rocked the sleeveless look.
Oh, yeah, because they want to show their guns.
Right, but now all the Unsullied have sleeves. They got to warm up, baby. Warm up for the coming cold.
They do have to warm up, and that's why you are not a huge fan of Grey Worm, because he uses Missandei to warm up.
Yeah, scratch that. Least favorite character. Kill him, George, kill him. Now, some people have noted that Grey Worm is rocking a round pendant that they hadn't noticed him rocking before. And people believe this is the symbol of Daenerys, a three-headed dragon circular pendant that he's wearing there on his.
Oh, that's a good catch. That's the kind of thing you can only see if you go frame by frame.
Or not. I think a lot of people have noticed this, and they're not going through it as meticulously as frame by frame as we are.
They didn't see it themselves. Maybe someone told them.
Now, as we're seeing Grey Worm, we hear Cersei has done her voiceover, and she says, enemies in the east. Now, of course, Daenerys and her crew, last time we saw them, they were in the ocean. They had just left Meereen, which is to the east, so it makes perfect sense that these Unsullied would be Cersei's enemies to the east, don't you think? What do you think about this actor, Grey Worm? Do you like Grey Worm as a character, Kev?
I do like Grey Worm as a character. I feel like he has a lot more personality on the show than he did in the books.
Well, I'm hopefully not spoiling books for anybody, but in the books, he doesn't have a romantic interest with Missandei, because Missandei is like 13 in the books. She's a little girl.
Well, they're all pretty young in the books, and that doesn't stop them from getting a busy.
Okay. We next come to something they call the painted table in the books. It's a carved table that is of Westeros. This carved painted table is on Dragonstone. It's where Stannis was in season 2 and season 3, and he left there in season 4.
R.I.P.
As we're coming up the table, we're actually following the King's Road, which is carved into the table. And on the right side, we see Rosby and Duskendale, which are towns which are just north of King's Landing. We see the King's Road actually split, and it goes on a road towards the Eyrie and the Vale of Arryn, and then to the left, it goes up north. This would be the way our characters would normally travel, going to the left from King's Landing up to Winterfell. And we see
this is way the way you'd come if you were coming from the south.
Yeah. And what's interesting is in the distance, we see a fire.
Fire.
Which it's like leading towards a fire, even though the camera is panning panning across the table and just on the directions of the table headed north. The next thing we see, it cuts to black.
Well, what do you think that fire is?
Well, obviously, whoever lives in this place, winter's come. You got to grill some dogs.
But that looks like a real fire. That's not just cooking some dogs.
Yeah.
Unless it's like cooking some dire wolves, if you mean dogs.
Cuts to black again for about 3 to 4 frames. Then we come up and we can tell it's a ship. And one thing that's fun about this ship is there's one kind of big sail like you would normally see, but then there are these two side sails. Have you ever seen a ship with side sails like that? I actually think that's pretty cool looking at those.
No, that is really cool. Are you sure this is not from Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, this was stolen in that hack of Disney. They're releasing this scene of it.
Great.
About 5 frames into it, there's a lightning flash. And just in that like one frame of lightning flash, you can see the Kraken symbol on the sail, the big center sail. Now, the Kraken is the sigil of House Greyjoy. But House Greyjoy has two sides of it. There's the Krakens who are with Daenerys, which is Theon and his sister Yara. And then there are the Kraken Greyjoys who hate them. And
evil Euron.
Evil Uncle Euron. And people are speculating that this is Euron's ship, the Silence, it's entitled in the book, only because it looks different, you know, because it has these kind of wings on it, which almost make it look like a dragon.
Well, they had to, after Yara and Theon took all their ships, they had to super quick build more ships, and they needed to go faster, so they built more wings on them. Another reason why this might be Euron's is because presumably Yara and Theon are already in much clearer waters.
Right. Well, it looks like this is either at night or during a storm on the seas. And many years ago, I'm talking many years ago, when I was a little kid, my grandmother took me on a cruise, my cousin and I on a cruise of the Greek Isles, and this ship, I got so seasick. It was rocking back and forth. The deck was constantly at like a 15-degree angle to one side. It was tough, but they never have that problem on the show. The show always keeps it rather steady, which I always find that's not realistic.
Didn't have the two wings.
That's right. Why didn't my cruise ship have the two wings? We cut back to the table with the carving of and the representation of Westeros on it. We can see the Eyrie to the right and the words the Vale of Arryn right in the center that the camera's panning further and further. We've gone frame by frame. We can see little scratches in the table.
We're getting close to the barbecue.
We are. I would love this table. You know, people say, what would you want? What would you want from Game of Thrones? Would you want your own Iron Throne? Would you want this? Would you want that? This table, I would love. I would love that.
Where are you going to put your glasses?
Right. Yeah, they're not going to ever be stable.
This is worse than the ship that you were on in the Greek Isles. Nowhere to put your plates. Nowhere to put your glasses.
We're flying over in the table where the table's cut out, where there would be this body of water entitled The Bight, but we're passing that, we're just going further and further north.
So you're saying the table's not realistic. It does not have a body of water.
Right. Why don't they have this little pool of water in the table? That would have been more realistic. Cuts to black, and it's just a straight cut. There's no dissolve. It cuts to black for 1 frame, 2 frame, 3 frame, 4 frames. Then we start dissolving up from black on a hand, sharpening what looks like a sword with a stone.
Ooh.
Do you want to predict, Catfish, whose hand this is? Because, call me crazy, I always think it's Arya's hand for some reason, but that hand seems too big. Maybe it's Brienne's hand. Whose hand do you think this is?
Gendry.
You think Gendry is coming back? He's been rowing all these years. We last saw Gendry, Catfish, in season 3. We haven't seen him since season 3.
He's got huge arms. He's been doing nothing but rowing and catching fish.
Well, he did. Gendry, remember, did work in the blacksmith shop back in season 1. So, okay, Gendry is a good bet. Anybody else? Do we recognize the sword because it has that kind of carving in it? We'll never know.
Until we watch.
That's true. And also, there's a torch behind it.
You know, I have to say, last year, when we were just sort of looking and guessing,
right,
we made some very good guesses based on this frame-by-frame. They would have been spoilers if we knew what we were talking about, because we guessed quite a bit about what was happening, especially with the wildfire.
No, we did. We cut back to this table. Maybe somebody is in the home decorating business. They just want to keep showing this table. Now we're up at a place you can see the last hearth, which is the Umber Castle in the north, is kind of front and center. Of course, the Umbers, we would think they're all gone after the little John Umber joined with Ramsay and got his neck bitten off by Tormund in the infamous Battle of the Bastards. We can also see a representation of Castle Black and East Watch by the Sea there on the table, and a representation of the Wall on the table. This is a cool friggin' table. This is why I want it.
I just don't know where you're going to put it.
Well, some people have joked, if you remember season two, this is the table where Stannis and Melisandre got busy and maybe created that smoke baby.
Oh, man. Well, no wonder Stannis was in such a bad mood. Probably had back problems this entire time.
The shadow baby. And it's flying over the wall. I wonder how they're going to do this in the show, because it's interesting. This table, if you remember it, one part of it is pointed towards the window, and another part, apparently here, is pointed towards interior of Dragonstone and this fire.
Now, at one point, when you get to the where Castle Black is, mm-hmm. if you look very closely, and I mean you have to look super close.
Frame by frame.
If you look super close, you can see that etched in very small. If you got to get super close, and you got to use it, it says Joffrey was here.
Oh, I thought they etched a little dead Jon Snow next. What I love is once you go past the wall, the table has little trees etched in it. Like, hey, there's a forest here out past the wall. I love that. This is some good handiwork, whoever did this. We cut straight to black for one frame, two frame, three frame, four frame. Four frame, we're dissolving up, and there we see Arya Stark. Evil Arya. We assume it's her. Who knows what face? You know, it could be somebody else wearing her face. She's on a white horse, and the ground has kind of like a dusting of snow.
Now, listen. What I think this is, is the thing that's going to be strange about Arya, and I hope they don't pull this out too much, is that now she can wear anybody's face. I hope they use it sparingly. But, for example, right now, she's actually the horse. So just in case someone tries to kill her, if they kill, quote-unquote, Arya, and the horse runs away, that's Arya getting away.
No, but notice how it's kind of a white horse. It has a white tail, but the horse almost has like black bangs. You see kind of blackish bangs on the front. I think that horse is Jack and Hagar. Remember his hair? He used to...
But look at her hair. I think it's Jackin riding Arya in a very platonic way. Platonic.
Skip ahead. We cut back to black. Friend frame, two frame, three frame, four frame, five frame, six frame. Boy, they really want you to have it. They want you to enjoy this black right now.
Yeah, because it's dark and mystical, and they want you to be thinking, which one was Arya?
Okay, after about 16 frames of black, that's half a second, it starts dissolving up, and we're now in that courtyard that we believe Cersei was walking at before.
It's not a pool, to my chagrin.
But now in the courtyard, it looks like Jaime is with her. It looks like this is a separate time, because it looks like Cersei is not wearing that furry outfit she was wearing before, if you ask me.
Must be, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, the warmest time of the day.
Now, you can see in the upper right corner on this of this map they're making of Westeros, you can see a chaos right there.
Yeah. Oh, I see it. Yeah.
It's also, other people refer to it as a ladder. I call it a chaos.
Yeah, sure.
And what's I love about this map of Westeros is it's not done yet. The upper left-hand corner is being worked on, and you see little scale versions of like somebody's like, okay, how do we have to make it? So there are little maps there that they're using to create this one big map.
Oh, it's like an inset.
Yeah. Now, if you really study this map of Westeros,
which we should,
it's very interesting which castles get highlighted. Obviously, the big castles. So if you look down in Dorne, which is kind of at about, this is a clock, about 4 o'clock on the screen, you can see Sunspear. You can see Highgarden in there. You can see other things. But the thing I find most fascinating is Cersei is standing, not exactly, but kind of right on top of the twins. You can see the twins right in front of her feet. And then if you look in the north, really only kind of two castles are big in the north, Winterfell and the Dreadfort. Of course, the Dreadfort was the home of House Bolton. House Bolton kind of kept that house, but then moved into Winterfell. But now, if House Bolton is dead, I kind of think whoever made this map, why did they make the Dreadfort such a big place? The Dreadfort, you know, until they stabbed Robb in the heart and stabbed the Starks in the back, the Dreadfort was just kind of like any other castle, like the Last Hearth or Carhold or any castle in the North White Harbor. And yet, the Dreadfort gets its own little shout-out.
Now, I have a few questions.
You can see Harrenhal Hall. Yeah, sorry, keep going. I just like pointing
Why
out
Why isn't the map complete? Is this a new map that they haven't had before? Is this because someone told her there's a table somewhere, and she said, well, we can't make a table because everything burned up, but we can paint.
Right.
We can make, and we'll make it bigger.
Catfish, that's a great question. Some people have thought this isn't a painting, that this is like a tapestry and people are weaving this somehow. One of the questions that we had at the end of last season, when Cersei is sitting on the throne and Jaime comes in and Jaime gives her that look, and you think to yourself, oh boy, how is Jaime going to like the fact that she blew up the Sept, killed all these people, pissed off a lot of people, their son, Tommen, their triple S, their super secret son, Tommen, he killed himself. Would Jaime be like, enough is enough, Cersei, I'm done with you?
Well,
but here he's with her, so he hasn't deserted her.
Yeah, he hasn't deserted her. I don't think he's going to desert her. I think that, you know, he has undergone a huge transformation in this series. He starts the series throwing a little kid out of a window, and now I think if you ask most people, they would say, I think he's a good guy.
Would a good guy stay with a mass-murdering woman?
Well, he loves her,
right,
and he's concerned, and let's just... No, he loves her, and he's concerned, and I think that he might be so concerned that he might fulfill the prophecy.
Ooh, well, we'll talk about that in our double B section.
Okay, let's do it.
This dissolves to black.
That's their favorite color.
I should point out that Robert's castle, the Baratheon castle of Storm's End, it's barely on the map. Like, it's harder to see on the map. I wonder if that's somebody trying to get in good with Queen Cersei. Like, let's make Robert's castle
real small.
Well,
at this point, if you're going to make a map, you want to make a map of where all the danger is, presumably.
We cut to black, but then we dissolve up rather quickly on Queen Cersei.
She's wearing the Cersei.
Black mourning usurper brother Tommen. And is this a small council room? I can't remember this wooden design behind her. It seems very interesting. As this trailer's been going, we haven't been talking about the audio of too much. Once again, it's Queen Cersei kind of giving some narration. She's talking about
basically
enemies
you...
to the east. And
right.
We see the Unsullied. Enemies to the west, she points out the ship. Enemies to the south was when we saw the hand sharpening the sword. Enemies to the north is when we saw Arya. But now, whatever stands in our way, we will defeat it. Damn, that is strong words, Catfish. Do you agree that the Lannisters will defeat it?
I feel like they should have set them up to be stronger if they expect the audience to believe they got a snowball's chance in hell against any one of these enemies.
Well, here's what I was thinking about that, Catfish, because I think that's a great point. How could anybody defeat dragons?
Well, forget it. They're so weakened. How could they defeat a force? I mean, the last time, the only reason they were able to repel a force from the sea was because of wildfire. Well, I don't think they got any of that left.
Theoretically, they only blew up the wildfire under the Sept. Here's the thing. Could wildfire kill dragons? It's hard to believe that fire could kill a dragon, but wildfire is this kind of special weird thing. And you would think it could blow up flesh, and so maybe it could. Maybe somehow they have enough wildfire to just blow up Daenerys' dragons?
Well, the secret here is, and we've kind of already spoiled it with our chapter...
Yeah.
Our septuple S chapter.
Yep.
Is that what we don't know yet, what most people don't know yet, is the ace in the hole is that Joffrey, who was the one who came up with the idea for the wildfire, and led the repelling of that attack from the safety of his command center, he led that attack. So the fact is they've got the ace in the hole, that Joffrey will be returning this year, and when he shows up on the map, all bets are off. He's like LeBron James.
So you think Cleveland's going to win the NBA Finals?
Just like LeBron James. It's not a coincidence that LeBron James is in the finals for the seventh year in a row.
Whoa.
When season 7 of Game of Thrones comes. What do they call LeBron James?
What do they call him? King James?
King James. That's right. You see how it all ties together?
No. The bombing of the Sept shows what I like to call double C.
Double C.
Cersei's courage. in that she goes lower than anybody would ever go. You know, in some ways, that's how the Boltons were able to take control. Is everybody thinks, oh, well, they would never do this. And then Cersei did it. The Boltons did it. And so is there a chance that Daenerys... Is there a chance that Cersei will go so low that Daenerys and Jon Snow and everybody else and the Martells, excuse me, I guess they're dead, the Sand Snakes, and Lady Olenna, is Cersei so devious that she could do something that they would never go that low, and that's how she could, you know, even the playing field?
Well, I suppose that's possible, but, you know, the people that you brought up only reinforce my point, and that is she's weak because why? She has now zero people she can call on.
Right.
She has got no compadres, no confederales. Mm-hmm. She can't pick up the raven and make a call. Okay. No one's going to answer.
Let's do an experiment. Who could she send a raven to who would answer the call? Like who?
Well, she doesn't.
Is there a sellsword company she could buy?
But where is she going to get the money from? Do you think the Bank of Braavos is still going to be on her side? I mean, where is she going to get that money?
You know what?
I mean, we do know that someone is joining her, but I don't know whether how she would know that they're joining her.
How about this? How about this? Everybody knows the real estate market's really tough now at King's Landing. A lot of demand, not much space because of the crater in the middle of the city.
No, I disagree.
When you
That's a lot of opportunity.
I'm saying she could make money selling.
Build your own. Okay.
Right.
To the people that she did not blow up.
Right.
I just feel like she doesn't have support outside the city, and I find it hard to believe that she's got – I mean, again, this is a different time, so obviously showing strength is going to be – she doesn't have to worry about people going, well, she did a horrible thing, so we're not with her. All they're going to do is be afraid that she's going to burn them too. But it just doesn't feel like she's got the strength.
Okay.
I'll be curious to see if they can make me believe that there's any sort of suspense in Cersei's downfall.
All right. Well, who do you think she's talking to here? She's saying, you know, whatever enemy comes towards us, we will defeat it. It's the gist of what she's saying. She's sitting in a chair and looking
up. Well, all she's got left is Jaime and her maester.
Qyburn.
And the
Franken Mountain.
Yeah, she's got the Franken Mountain.
Wouldn't that be great if now she just has long conversations with the Franken Mountain? She's so lonely. She'd be like, so, Franken Mountain, I was a child when this happened.
Things better than I do. Who that we know possibly be in this meeting with her?
She could be talking to Septa Unella. She's like, I tortured you for a while. Now I need some girl time, girl chat.
But honestly, who do we know?
Well, let me put it this way, Catfish. She's sitting in a chair and she's looking up. I know who she's definitely not talking to. He's a guy I like to call Evil Uncle Tyrion.
Oh, why would she not be looking up?
Because he just doesn't measure up.
Okay.
Now, let me explain that joke to you.
It has been a while.
Evil Uncle Tyrion. He's short. All right, so now let's...
Oh, wow. Okay, and? Oh, that's it. Okay, got it.
I had to explain that part of it. Then it cuts from Cersei, and we see Lannister soldiers. They have their sigil of the lion on their shield.
Right.
This is pretty.
All four of them.
Hey, there are more than four Lannister soldiers. Even in this shot, there's got to be 15, 16? That's a lot of guys there.
But what you don't know is that the only real one is a real one on this end, and he's holding a stick that's got a lot of fake Lannisters off to the left. So they can only march on one side. You can only see them from the left side.
This is expensive armor. Maybe this is why the Lannisters ran out of gold. They had to keep digging in Casterly Rock to afford these uniforms. Now, they're also marching on what looks like kind of a brown grass. You can just barely see that, but that would tell me they're not in the north. They're not up in snow. Spoiler alert.
Again, they can't, you know, they decided last time that they would stay in the city and defend themselves from the city. Now, I can't imagine them leaving. Why wouldn't they just stay in the city again? Why would they go out and meet their foes?
You're pulling him into a wildfire trap. See? You love it.
He doesn't care about anybody else.
We cut to the throne room. Above Cersei on the Iron Throne, we see a new sigil, now a Lannister sigil. I want to go through this real quick. In season one, when King Robert was on the throne, it was the Baratheon stag. When His Grace King Joffrey took over, Joffrey created his own sigil, which was on one side a lion, and on the red and yellow lion for the Lannister sigil, and on the other side was a yellow and black stag for Baratheons. Now that it's Cersei, all the stags are gone. It is just a lion there. Jaime is beside her, as is Frank and Gregor Clegane, the mountain there. And someone is talking to the queen. Through the grates of one of the fires, you can see that this looks like a man with kind of a buzzed cut haircut, but we kind of can't tell anything about him. I was desperately trying to see who this man addressing the queen is.
It kind of looks like he might be on some steps, and the fact that he's on some steps and still is very short might mean that it might be evil Uncle Tyrion.
Well,
what if he went as an emissary for Daenerys to tell her, "You effed, baby"? That would be bold, since going back there, I think, would be a very dangerous proposition. But look, Jaime has the look on his face that only an irritating younger brother can cause.
Well, I don't think it's Tyrion, but he is not happy. If this is the same scene, in trailers they cut around a lot, but if this is the same scene where they cut to a close-up of Jaime, he looks P.O.
But tell me, doesn't he have that look that I only see on your face when your brother does something wrong, when your brother's killed your father and he comes back to tell you you're next?
Okay, all right.
Just go with me on this.
Never, I'm not going with you. Then we cut to a shot of Cersei on the queen, and I love, she looks perturbed. She's raising her hand on one of the armrests there, like she wants to clutch it and grab it and just choke the life out of it.
Well,
love it.
I will say this. You know the old phrase, you don't like to be the bearer of bad news.
Right.
Whoever's shown up there,
bad.
I don't have very great prospects. Now, further bolstering my potential claim.
Well, here, I want to read the words that the closed captioning says.
Okay.
Closed captioning, while these scenes are going on of the Lannister guards marching in the throne room, it's Cersei's...
Joker's to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Cersei's voice still talking, and she says, "We're the last Lannisters, the last ones who count," as it cuts to evil Uncle Tyrion on a cliff.
Okay.
And the last ones who count, I think that is a little, me think the queen does protest too much, and that's your sign that King Joffrey's coming back.
But I think that falls on exactly with my suspicion that it's Tyrion, because he says, "I'm a Lannister too," and she says, "We're the last Lannisters, the last one who count, because you don't measure up."
Oh.
Let's just say there's a lot of proof that what I'm saying is right.
All right. Well, we'll remember that.
Do it.
We're behind Tyrion on this bluff.
So speaking of that, cutting to Lannisters who don't count.
Right. We cut to the front and we see evil Uncle Tyrion's face. He's still got his hideous scar. He's still wearing his Hand of the Queen badge.
Though not as hideous as it is in the book.
I don't know. I see evil Uncle Tyrion and I see it that hideous. Then it cuts to what we assume is evil Uncle Tyrion coming to the edge of this cliff. In the distance, we see the Dragonstone Castle. So this trailer actually is a bit of a spoiler in that why would evil Uncle Tyrion being there on Dragonstone?
Right, and he's looking up. Now, granted, he looks up at everything.
That's right.
He looks up at dogs.
Yep.
He looks up at cats. He looks up at rats. He looks up at, I could do this better if I was Dr. Seuss, but he looks up at mice. He looks up at dice. He's near the end of the cliff, we assume he's looking up at a dragon.
And these things are gigantic. One dragon flies up, then a second one. And then this third one, which is kind of the gold or green dragon, its color, if you just freeze a frame of it, that is really gold, if you ask me. That's a really gold. This one, these dragons have distinct looks.
Well, remember, if we've learned anything from ancient Young Lit, it's that nothing gold can stay.
Let's edit that out. There's also kind of smoke they've put into this cliff. And then we cut to another what you would call spoilery shot. It is two Unsullied opening a door, opening a huge gate, and in the foreground is that white-haired, evil hussy, Queen Daenerys. Look at this. And the gate they're opening is to what in the distance has always looked like Dragonstone. If you've read the books, you know that Daenerys always calls herself Daenerys nicknamed Stormborn. Why? Because Daenerys was actually born on Dragonstone. That's the name of this island, the name of this castle, during a big storm. And so
it doesn't look stormy now in this shot.
No.
It looks beautiful.
So she should wait to come back till it's stormy. Yeah, it is a beautiful digital composition.
I was just going to say, you know, people always say when they go on vacation, they're like, I want to go to Dorne. They never say to Stormborn, they never say they want to go to this castle. And yet, it's lovely at certain times of the year.
When Rick Steves does it, he'd be like, while normally storm-filled and strong breeze off the coast, Dragonstone is lovely right at the beginning of winter.
Try to go when you can actually see dragons. But stay away. I give this castle 2 stars.
Then we cut to the front of Daenerys. There is Daenerys. She's got her hair pulled back. Over on the left side of the screen, we see Varys. We see Varys's outfit there on the left side, a couple of Unsullied, and then there's Grey Worm there.
Now, she looks like she's also looking up, maybe at dragons, but also we know she is also very short. But she has a look of concern on her face.
Well, this would have to be weird. She had never, like...
Oh, maybe this is her seeing it for the first time as an adult.
Right. Well, first time, if you trust the books and the story that was told, she was born on Dragonstone in a storm. Her mom died in childbirth. And then, pretty much almost immediately after, while she was still a newborn infant, they had to run to the other side of the Narrow Sea because Stannis was going to come kill them for his brother, King Robert.
Yeah, they were just going to get rid of all of them.
Boy, that would have made this story so much shorter if they had just done that.
But not as short as evil Uncle Tyrion.
He just doesn't.
So we think that's her seeing it for the first time, probably.
I would imagine so. Hey, maybe this is episode one. Maybe she makes it to Westeros and Dragonstone on episode one. It dissolves to black, but then up real quickly to Daenerys placing a hand down on the sand. Is this the first time that she touches soil in Westeros? And how powerfully emotional that could be for her. It does make me wonder, why don't any of these places build piers? Why don't they build docks so that the ships could actually dock as opposed to, wait, we got to row our boat ashore?
My question is, do you think every time she gets on her hands and knees, she thinks of her husband?
Which one? Oh, she never married his star, so that's a good point. So just Drogo. In the dialogue, which we cut over because this is going frame by frame, Daenerys Targaryen says kind of what I just said, in that she goes, I was born to rule the Seven Kingdoms, and I will. That seems real egotistical. You know what I mean? Real egotistical.
Well, I feel like if you were walking around and you had like three, even if, let's not say dragons, let's say you had 3 badass dudes around with you,
you would
talk a lot of smack.
More than I do. That's correct.
Yeah. You talk even more.
We cut to some, what it looks like, Dothraki opening 2 doors now. We're inside, and we see what we would believe is kind of Daenerys' makeshift throne room here on Dragonstone.
Now, does this mean that all the Targaryens were small? Because it looks like someone not much taller could fit on that throne.
You mean it looks like it was built specifically for Daenerys, this seat and this throne?
It really does. I mean, she doesn't have a whole lot of headspace. Can you imagine the guy's like sitting on the throne, he keeps banging his head on it? Ah, this throne.
So the history and lores of Westeros is that Targaryens escaped the doom of Valyria because they were on this Isle of Dragonstone. One of the Targaryen little girls had a vision of Valyria's doom, and so they ran to this place they called Dragonstone and built this castle. And sure enough, they were one of the few Valyrians to survive. And so they lived here, and then later they did their conquer of Westeros from there. To the left of Daenerys, we see yet another Dothraki guard. How do you think she chooses, okay, in this case I'll have a Dothraki guard me, in this case I'll have an Unsullied guard me? You got to keep both happy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, is one the Secret Service and one is the army? Like, are the Dothraki the Secret Service, but the Unsullied are the army?
I think for her entertainment, you know, she spent a lot of time learning how to be a good ruler.
Yeah.
Without seemingly having learned to be a good ruler.
Say that again.
So I think what she does is every night she picks one of each, and then they fight, and whoever's still walking and standing by the end of the fight, they get to stand next to her throne the next day.
It cuts to theoretically a new location, and I say theoretically just because of this one behind-the-scenes bit of information. We cut to what looks like a courtyard with a looks like hundreds of Unsullied pouring in with their shields, with their spears. I say it looks like a new location because above the little arch here in the courtyard, we see two sigils of lions, and we see an L for Lannister in the middle of this courtyard.
Right, but this does not seem like King's Landing.
No.
So my projection is, is that this is indeed CR.
Casterly Rock, the home of the Lannisters.
Right.
The home of House Lannister.
Now, we don't know how many Lannisters are around, but we know that nobody big or important is protecting Casterly Rock.
Well, now that Uncle Kevin went his way in the Sept, who would be guarding Casterly?
That's what I'm saying.
Some cousin. Lannister cousin.
Yeah. The cream of the crop.
Hey, what I want to say, though, about the behind-the-scenes stuff, is if you remember in Season 6... they built this beautiful drawbridge and courtyard and kind of balcony up top for River Run because we had a couple episodes set at River Run. The behind-the-scenes knowledge that people have said is they've just repurposed the River Run set to be a new location. And this is the River Run set with now this Lannister kind of artwork on it. We see a dead Lannister guard laying. So the Unsullied are coming in and they are PO'd. They come. And as the scene cuts to, instead of being overhead, we see some Unsullied totally kicking ass with their spears.
They are. And let me say something. It is very tough to operate with a long spear in a confined hallway like this. And yet they seem to be doing a bang up job. They've learned how to do some infighting.
Right. We see in this hallway, once again, this was part of the balcony back walkway of River Run in Season 6, this set was. People believe it's Grey Worm because this Unsullied soldier has that circular piece of jewelry, which not other Unsullied
soldiers
have.
Oh, only he gets to wear that? He's
apparently
special.
Then we cut to black, we come back, and we're in the north. And it's Winterfell. We see Brienne there. We see Surly Sansa Stark. And we see Jon Snow. He's not seated at the table.
Oh, Mopey Moperson is back.
But he's turning around to look possibly as somebody has just entered the great room there in Winterfell. But then it will cut from this, and then we see Jon back at the head table with Davos next to him. And this is a real fun, if you like seeing characters, in this one wider shot of the Winterfell great room. On the far left, you see Littlefinger leaning against the wall. There's a kind of a center row between the two tables. And up near the front of the center row on the left, you see Little Lady Lyanna Mormont. You come down a bit, and then you see Tormund there with someone with a long beard who's probably another wildling. On the other side of this center aisle, we see Brienne at the front. They are following their new king in the north.
Yeah, except he seems to be, and maybe I'm just projecting, but he seems to me to be having as much trouble trying to get these guys to agree to whatever he's talking about as he did with the Night's Watch.
Oh, yeah.
So he better watch his back. He doesn't know how many
wear
times
lots
he can
of
come
padding,
back.
Wear armor, whatever you have to do.
Well, as we all know that Jon Snow is about 125 pounds dripping wet, he's wearing lots of padding at all times to appear more imposing than he is.
Well, catfish, way to.
That's behind the scenes.
Okay. We cut to Sansa looking out either a window. There's blue sunlight hitting her on the face. But who will not leave her alone? It's Littlefinger wearing his mockingbird sigil on his cloak. And you know Littlefinger is just an evil dude who, like me, likes young women.
Yeah, he has been trying to get into that family's pants for his entire life.
Come on. He could have had Roz. He could think of all the characters if he just paid some coin to. Now, Littlefinger is saying to Sansa, he's saying, your father and brother are gone,
but you are still here.
Right. So that's a nice little, that's kind of a nice little pump. He is pumping. He's her hype man. You know what I mean? How rappers used to have hype men. And so he specifically, your father and brothers are gone, yet here you stand. And so do you think that Sansa will fall for any of Littlefinger's kind of tricky kind of manipulations?
You know, sadly, I feel like she will, for the sake of the story, but I feel like we've had her learn enough that she'd be more suspicious. She's been suspicious of him. Seems like she's been suspicious of him forever.
Oh, yeah. In the last episode of Season 6, she tells Jon, she's like, I wouldn't trust Littlefinger. Who in their right mind would trust Littlefinger?
I feel like for the story, she needs to get drawn in a little bit, and he needs to sort of try and pitch her against Jon, But I've always hated kind of misconnections or people misconstruing what other people have said.
Okay.
I hated Romeo and Juliet for this reason. The fact that, like, she just didn't get the message. I hated all that. So,
hater.
So this storyline would probably irritate me a little bit. Now, luckily, they only have 7 episodes, so maybe. I mean, on the other hand, we like it when Littlefinger's machinations work. And then he gets kind of, you know,
smacked around.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, hopefully it won't be too long.
We cut to a scene of what looks like a door opening in the wall. And so is this Castle Black? I didn't remember the door in Castle Black looking like this, but I can imagine one reason why you might open the door. When we last saw Bran Stark and Mira Reed, Uncle Benjen had dropped them off, not at the wall, but like 200 yards from the wall. Thanks. I don't have any legs, Uncle Benjen.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that means Bran Stark's got to get south of the wall, and they're opening it up to let little Bran Stark through.
So you are saying you didn't see a reason why they'd want to open the door, but I feel like there's a reason why someone might want to hold the door.
Catfish, I almost feel like we're going to get on a side tangent here, because you didn't like that episode of Hold the Door. Have you come around and admitted that's a damn good episode?
I didn't mind the episode. I just thought the payoff for Hold the Door, when literally all he gave them was another 30 seconds and they should have been devoured anyway. I didn't buy it.
Terrible.
Listen, you're the one who's always saying that you think...
No, they gave him... Remember, we timed that out. He gave him like 2 minutes.
You think that George R. R. Martin does some plotting better than the shows do, and I think the reverse. What if George R. R. Martin...
I'm going to interrupt you, but only because you're misconstruing what I said.
But that's my prerogative. Go ahead.
I say George R. R. Martin's in the books. He builds his plots better, meaning there's a lot of smart build. Their characters don't do dumb things. There's kind of always a logical path. This happens, this happens, this happens. But what I believe you say, and what I would agree with you on, is that the show, because it has this time constraint, you know, there aren't unlimited number of pages as there might be in a battle. The show moves at a quicker pace because it just doesn't have the time.
And it's gotten rid of some of the extraneous plots that I feel like have bogged George R. R. Martin down and have not added to the storyline.
All right.
But my main point is, if when this book comes out in 2030, where we see what Hodor does, if it's maybe even slightly different, if George R. R. Martin does it different and better, will you admit to me that that situation could have been paid off in a better way?
We'll see. We'll see. All right. I will. How about this? If I like the book better, but it's not like I'm suddenly going to not like the show. So that's what
right. I'm just saying. We may have timed it out. It was not 2 minutes, and still they were coming so fast and they were bored down. Okay. All right. If you say so. How many frames is that?
We've got too many frames. We cut to Theon Greyjoy and it looks like he's on a ship that's burning, and let me just say, he is given a look that he just reeked in his pants, if you know what I mean.
I think I do know what you mean.
Reek, it rhymes with stink. And this is a beautiful shot with what you would assume are these ashes flying around his face. I really do like this shot. It's an artistic shot.
It's a cool shot, for sure.
Then we cut to the woman who is in real life, pregnant, and probably already given birth to Guy Pearce's baby, the lovely Carice Van Houten,
so
a.k.a. the Red Priestess Melisandre.
Wait, a real baby? Or a smoke baby?
Or a shadow baby. Oh, no. I hope not. And how would you describe her face in this shot, Catfish? What would you describe the look she's given?
Well, we're not given too long, but it seems to be a real look of concern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my problem, and I've already talked about this with Cersei, is I feel like that Daenerys is so overpowered that it's going to be hard for me to believe that they're going to face a lot of resistance to their mortal foes.
Okay.
I feel that it's more even match with the White Walkers. So that they seem like a foe that I'm actually genuinely scared of everyone beating.
Okay.
But I feel like Daenerys can just come down and just scream down and mop things up real quick.
Well, how did that come up? Because we're looking at Melisandre. I assume the reason why it came up is because when we cut over Melisandre's shoulder, it appears that she's looking down at people. And these people are on the same kind of pathway that Daenerys saw when she opened up the gates at Dragonstone. So would Melisandre, who's been exiled from the north, kind of go to the only place she knows other place in Westeros she really knows. Would she just go to Dragonstone and be like, well, I'll hang out here? And then is she going to run to Daenerys? And she's looking down at people walking up this pathway here on Dragonstone.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, her concern, she's got to have a lot of concerns now. For a long time, she thought what she believed in wasn't true. But then she brought someone back to life, so she's got to feel good about that.
Oh, yeah, she better believe. Let me tell you, I always have a questioning faith. If I brought somebody back to life, I'd go, okay, I believe it.
Right, and you wouldn't even need those three guys to be talking smack to everybody.
Melisandre, we found out back in season 3, had a vision where she said she and Arya would meet again. So on Melisandre's journey to Dragonstone, is she going to meet Arya again? Or is that prophecy not going to come true? Or does that mean that if Arya is in a snowy landscape and Melisandre's down in Dragonstone, that maybe they won't meet in season 7? That's what I find interesting.
They'll still meet, though. I feel like everybody who's still alive will meet.
Here in season 7 or maybe season 8?
Yes, at the end of season 7. When I feel like I feel like we're going to vanquish the foes. And
so
then,
you're saying both Arya and Melisandre live to the end of season 7?
I feel like they do.
Okay.
I mean, we need to have some important people die. Man, we don't need to talk about now. We can talk about later who we think is going to
That's going to be one of our podcasts coming up.
Oh, okay.
We cut to a beautiful digitally composited shot where, if you believe the Entertainment Weekly article, this shot of people running, and they keep looking back like they're running from something. You would assume the White Walker here in the snow is actually in a quarry there, the same quarry where they film Castle Black in Northern Ireland. And they make it look like this true Iceland, you know, kind of hellscape of snow. And these people are running, running, running. I love that shot. But once again, that shot just reinforces that we don't see any whites or White Walkers that we know of in this trailer. It cuts then to Arya Stark in, once again, more snowy landscape. It's not completely snowed over, and she's in front of a fire, and she's building a fire. Then it cuts, and we see her putting out
a breath. Is that her building the fire, or is that Jochen building the fire? I feel like she's standing off to the side.
What if that's the waif?
She's tied to a tree over there.
Then we have another great shot, an evocative shot. You would assume it's a shot that continues from those people running, and it's people forming a circle. If you saw Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, I feel sorry for you. But this is also like that moment where the Jedi, when they're getting attacked from all sides, they form a circle because it's the last they can do. And in this circle, we have, if I counted correctly, 12 people. 12 people in a circle. Is this north of the wall? Are they about to face off against the whites and White Walkers? Guess what? Good luck if you think anybody's going to survive that with these 12, huh?
Unless they're Joffrey's apostles.
Now, some people have pointed out that one of the characters is holding what appears to be a warhammer. This is the character at 3 o'clock if you put a hand dial on it. But you really can't make out any of the characters. They've done a good job of snowing it up. But the Entertainment Weekly article also implies that that might be a lot of characters we know and love. It dissolves to black over so many frames. And what is being said as we see all these scenes is Davos saying, if we don't put aside our enmities and bound together, we will die. And so then it cuts from that to a scene of Littlefinger. Boy, he's getting a lot of play in this trailer.
And he is looking like the cat that just ate the canary.
Yeah.
He is so damn full of himself. Is that why he's your favorite character?
He's not actually my favorite character. Obviously, King Joffrey is. Blasphemy, you speak there, catfish. But this feels like a big year for him. This is another beautifully composed shot because there's just a little bit of light on his face. Then we cut to where they are jumping up. There are Dothraki screamers, Dothraki riders, and they are standing up on their saddles. Who knew it was a rodeo show in Westeros, baby?
Hey, the Dothraki have some skills that other people don't, and they like to show them off.
Now, that is an awful lot of horses. Would you admit that? They are on green grass. So if this is in Westeros, once again, it's nowhere near the north in any way where these Dothraki are.
These Dothraki cannot like winter.
Now, one of these Dothrakis, it cuts when he jumps. It cuts when he jumps, and this is just something that I saw this great YouTuber talk about, that when the Dothraki members jumps, if you look at the style of the helmet, that it looks like the Dothraki screamer is jumping towards, that's not a Lannister helmet they're jumping towards. It's kind of got a point on the back of it. And they say, once again, this might be a spoiler, but they say that helmet that these soldiers are wearing looks like the sigil of House Tarly, Samwell Tarly's family. We met them in one episode.
Oh, wow.
Back in season 6.
And the dad was a real dick.
He just wanted the best for his family. What's the big deal?
And the best for his family was for Samwell to go away and never come back.
And not specifically touch that sword. He's like, you know what? I want to point out the sword that you're not allowed to touch.
It's, if there's any confusion, right. Here, I'm going to write and put a sticky note on it that says, do not touch this.
Do not touch this. We then cut to another evocative shot. I love it. It's
right. It goes right from a fight off horseback to a fight in the water with fire.
Yeah, this is great. And what's great is if you really look at this shot, there seems to be another ship in the distance in the upper left-hand corner, and it's on fire too. Now, does this mean the dragons have come and set fire to things, or is this part of Evil Uncle Euron's incredible plan? And we'll talk about that more as the shot cuts away. But this is definitely Pirates of the Caribbean. And the ship's on fire. This is assumingly in the scene where Theon was in earlier when he was in the ship, which had ashes flying on his face. Davos Seaworth, we get to see a close-up shot of him as he continues speaking. And he says, then it doesn't matter whose skeleton sits the Iron Throne. We cut back to the painted table, the carved table of Westeros. And who's there but Daenerys and evil Uncle Tyrion?
Ooh.
Daenerys is theoretically standing on the exact spot where Melisandre and Stannis got busy.
She's feeling the love.
But it feels like they've turned the table around from how it used to be. It's always tough. We cut from that. Too much Uncle Tyrion for my taste, and we get somebody who measures up.
Sir Frankengregor.
Oh, he is good. Do you like his new armor as part of the Queen's Guard? Do you like this new look?
Whoa. I do like this new look.
Black armor. Hell yeah. Then it cuts to a shot of, I assume from earlier, of people boarding this ship. It's like they've got a hanging walkway, which allows them to go from one ship to another ship. Later on, as they board the ship, as you go frame by frame, you'll be able to see that the ship they're boarding, somebody on the ship they're boarding has a Greyjoy, aka Kraken shield that they're holding. And so is this a battle of Greyjoys, or is this Uncle Euron attacking somebody whose shields we don't see?
Oh, yeah. I think it's Greyjoy and Greyjoy crime.
Oh, man. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. We get another scene which people love. Jon Snow in the Winterfell crypts. We see the statue of Lyanna on the far right side of the screen.
And
she's holding a candle.
And you know that Littlefinger is, he's all alone, so he's talking smack to Jon.
But Jon's going to give him the Ned Stark treatment. Ned Stark threw Littlefinger up against a wall outside his brothel back in season one. Here, John does the same thing. He throws Littlefinger up against a wall. Now, of course, that didn't work out too well for Ned. Is this going to work out well for John?
Well, again, John's got to be careful because Littlefinger likes to put his word poison into ladies' ears.
Oh, man. And other places. Okay, we're back in seemingly the castle with the courtyard. Here we can definitely see it's Unsullied fighting Lannister men wearing Lannister shields.
It's the Unsullied in their winter wear.
Right. And this is one point I want to bring up. So we saw the Dothraki fighting out in this grass, and then we see the Unsullied fighting in this courtyard, and we assume this Lannister-held castle, possibly Castle Rock or something. And so it's like Daenerys said, two armies to two different locations, which would probably be a smart tactical move.
And not just that, but put people where they know how to fight. The Unsullied know how to fight in the cities, and the Dothrakis are good on the plain.
I like it. I like it. There's another great shot where we see two Lannister banners hanging as this. It's just all hell breaking out. This is really like an action movie trailer, don't you think?
Yeah.
You know, we got to give it up for Game of Thrones. They do spectacle well.
Oh, they're going to give it to us. It's going to be sword on sword crime.
Next, we see Walder Frey looking underneath something on the floor. Oh, wait, that's Walder Frey wearing Arya Stark's face. For some reason, that thing behind Arya, to me, it looks like a cigarette machine or a jukebox. What is that thing in the distance that's out of focus?
It looks like a water basin. In other words, like where you go to the bathroom.
A privy.
Yeah, sure.
Next, we see an ad for Dove Skincare, and it we can only assume is the friend zone quarantine.
Yeah, so where is Ser Jorah that now they just put him in a convent somewhere and they're just basically going to keep him stored there until he dies?
I mean, why not just send him to Valyria with the other stone men? Because you don't want to be around this man. He's contagious and he's reaching out. Yeah,
why don't they just send him somewhere where they don't like people and have him infect as many people as possible?
Right. That's Cersei's going to be like, Ser Jorah, mm-hmm. I'll give you your pardon if you go to Dragonstone and give everybody a big hug.
You mean Daenerys.
Right, yeah. That.
So, this is the five-year plan, right? Because Jorah certainly has taken a long time for him to get moldy.
Do you think you could just cut off the arm, like lose the arm? Do you think that would work, or you're doomed?
Gosh,
it's in your blood.
You would think that if that was the case, people would have tried it by now and learned that it doesn't.
Right.
We haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly care too much for this storyline. So
you don't like Ser Jorah, Ser Frenzo?
No. I just don't like the getting the scale. I don't
getting grayscale. Huh,
yeah.
Okay.
It seemed like it was going to be a bigger thing, and it seems like now that I think about it, they probably just played it up just so that we could see its effect on Jorah. But I thought it was going to have something bigger to do with the story, and it doesn't.
Well, at this point, I
wouldn't like it to have too much to do with the story. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, being in the friend zone is being a bit quarantined already. So this is double quarantine. Friend
Ouch.
Zone quarantine.
Ouch.
We cut back to Dothraki screamers, and this time they're definitely fighting somebody with Lannister helmet on, and he cuts him down with his arrak. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And then there's another Lannister who's got a lance or a spear, and I'm like, why aren't you stabbing this guy's horse? You know, he's coming to kill you. Stab his friggin' horse, baby.
And then what we see is that Jon Snow has gotten really afraid. He's not a great leader, and he's really afraid. He decides to run away from the fight.
Yep.
And instead, one of his friends,
Tormund,
has to chase him and say, no, John,
get back
I need
here.
You to
Fine.
Learn lead these people. That's what's happening here.
This is, if you ever wondered what the visual meme leading from behind is, it's Jon Snow running to behind. And so, and he's turning around to look back. So once again, he's being chased. He's looking back at Tormund. He's like, oh no, Tormund's going to catch me and make me fight.
Don't catch me. I just want to run away.
Okay, let's get to it. Our girl, our lovely girl, Missandei, is there, and it looks like she's taking off Grey Worm's clothes, Catfish.
Mm.
What could this possibly mean? Grey Worm is a eunuch, baby.
Yes, but I think we learned
that
there are two kinds of eunuchs.
We did?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are ones where they just took the berries.
Right.
And some where they take the twig and the berries. So as we all know...
We know.
This is continuing that, following upon that,
all
following
sure.
hard upon. As we all know.
Did you say hard upon?
Yeah, I did. It's a Shakespearean term. That losing your berries doesn't mean that your twig can't come to life.
Family-friendly podcast here.
It's all euphemism all the time.
We cut from that, and then we get to people actually...
More romance.
Macking down Yara Greyjoy and Ilaria Sand. Whoa!
These are two strong ladies who love ladies.
If you're Yara Greyjoy and Ilaria Sand starts kissing you, and you think to yourself, now what happened to her last lover? Oh, eyes crushed, cracked skull.
Well, that's why she's got her eyes closed. She's protecting herself.
Next, we come to something which may hint as to where those Unsullied people were fighting, Catfish. You said Casterly Rock. We see evil Uncle Tyrion taking a piece on the board there of the painted table. I call it the carved table because it doesn't look too painted here. And he knocks over a lion sigil. And if you look closely, it's kind of hard. The letters C-A are there like it is Casterly Rock.
Whoa. Well, but
it's hard to see.
It's not only is it hard to see, but we do know that Tyrion likes to play with his little toys, so it doesn't really mean anything. Maybe
he's
just like, and then I knocked over this lion. I knocked over this lion.
No, that British accent was too close to being real. We cut to a shot of two bodies falling into water. So is this from the naval battle earlier? And we see a blast of flame appear above them. I love the idea that we're going to have a naval battle, that we're going to have naval warfare. That is so cool. Game of Thrones, if you watch Vikings, if you watch a lot of shows, Game of Thrones has actually been kind of on the cheap side because they've never actually built an actual working boat. They built a boat that they can film on surrounded by green screen, but the fact they are doing some water-type stunts, I hope I hope it pays off, and I hope it's cool. Even though I believe that battle that we saw in this trailer is, you know, green screen stuff.
Right, but
I want it to be cool. I want a naval battle.
What was happening there was that was Jon Snow and Tormund falling in the ice as Tormund was chasing Jon Snow, and they fell in the ice.
Tormund saying, "Get back here."
Yeah.
So there isn't any more dialogue except a dragon roars, and then we cut to a shot. Remember how I mentioned that the Unsullied are fighting in one area and the Dothraki are fighting in another area? And this is one heck of a shot. They filmed this in Spain. Game of Thrones films everywhere. But this shot of all these Dothraki screamers with a dragon flying over them. Now, the one thing I'll say is that I can't tell which dragon this is. You would assume it's Drogon because that's the main one that seems to do all the fighting. I can't tell if there's a person on this dragon. There might be a person on it. It's very tough to tell. But that is an impressive shot that we're going to end on. What do you think, Catfish?
I do love that shot.
Beautiful. Lovely. Incredible. Gets you hyped. Gets you excited. Makes these next 7 weeks, oh, it's going to be painful to wait, don't you think?
I would think it'd be painful to wait, except for the fact that we're going to provide so much entertainment for Game of Thrones listeners over this 7 weeks.
Yep.
Their only thing is they're going to have to wait for the next week. Okay, did we do it? Did we fill 1,000 minutes?
Yes, we did.
Oh, great.
There's some titles that come up that say Game of Thrones, Season 7. So then Game of Thrones, the new season. Love it, love it, love it. I'm so excited.
There's a couple of people we didn't see in this trailer.
Yeah, let's talk
about
them.
It's interesting that television shows don't do this, whereas movies do it. Television shows give you one trailer. Movies will give you a bunch of different trailers, but that's it. We just have this one trailer for 61 million people to munch on. But we missed out on some of the tidbits. One of them not so small.
Samwell Tarly.
Exactly. You picked up what I was putting down.
And another one
that's also, that used to be small, but is no longer small. Bran.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Baby Sam.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing that the actor playing Bran, that the role of Bran means that he can't walk, so they can sit him down. But I think him sitting down will be just as tall as Jon Snow standing up. He's a big, tall dude now.
Love it. I've always liked Bran. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So what do we?
So why? we didn't see Qyburn. Who else didn't we see? If we didn't see Sam, we didn't see Gilly and Baby Sam.
Right. But they're separated anyway, so we may not see them until the last season. Probably would be my guess.
No, we're gonna see him this season.
Okay.
Sure.
But you think we're gonna see Sam? Well, why didn't we see any of Samwell? He's doing very exciting stuff in the library.
Right. Sam. Right, you know, cut, action, fight. Samwell slowly turns a book page.
Yeah.
Yep, read that page.
So
next.
I can understand why we didn't see Samwell.
How about my boy Qyburn? I love Qyburn.
Okay, but we saw Sir Frank and Gregor, so we assume that Qyburn is around.
Okay, we didn't.
He's the one who's constantly pumping him with whatever he needs to stay alive. But the question is,
we didn't see Bran. And
why didn't we see Bran? Is that because that's too much of a spoiler? That's going to be some kind of a surprise?
Right, if we see him south of the wall. We didn't see any of the guys at Castle Black, like Ed, who we normally see. But we saw the wall go up, so you assume we might see Castle Black. We didn't see, now we know, zombified Uncle Benjen.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him back and kicking ass again.
Who else was it? Who else didn't we see?
Well, we did see Gendry sharpening the knife.
You think that's Gendry? I think that might have been Brienne. I don't know. I'm
okay. Well, you have your opinion. I have mine. But I know.
Yeah.
That it was Tyrion.
Okay.
In the throne room
with the candlestick.
Exactly.
Who else didn't we see? Who are we forgetting? Anybody else? Well, we didn't see Uncle Euron. He might have been in some of those scenes on the burning ships, but it was too tough to tell.
Right. It's just that Samwell and Euron are part of the story, but not one of the main players. It's just weird not to see Bran at all.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Well, that's it for this week's Joffrey of Podcast. Are you excited, Catfish? Are you thrilled for Season 7 in our countdown of 7 podcasts to get there?
Oh, I am super excited.
Man.
Super excited. I mean, this is just too long. It's too long for us to wait. But unlike our listeners, they won't have the joy. We won't have the joy of listening to this podcast. Will we have the joy of doing them?
Man, when I see this, I get double G.
Double G.
Genuinely geeky. because this is a this gets me excited. I never really was into fantasy as a kid, but this George R. R. Martin's books and now the show.
Well,
I'm all in.
Plus, there's two things. Number one, we know we're steamrolling towards the end.
Yep.
And that goes hand in hand with the other thing.
Number two,
which is that, you know, we are far off from the book. So even those of us who I remember my excitement in the first season, waiting for people to see the evil Ned get his head cut off.
The bee netting.
Since I knew it was happening, and I figured they would do it because it was because I knew all these other people needed to be main characters. It doesn't make any sense to keep Ned around if you're going to do all these other things. So I knew for sure it was going to happen, even though it was shocking. But now we've got the excitement of not knowing what is going to happen. And for those of us who read the books and got to a point where we thought, is this really going to ever end? We're going to get an ending. It may not be the ending that George R. R. Martin wanted specifically. He did talk to the writers. The writers talked to him. So maybe it'll be in the same general area, but we're going to get an end to this. And having watched the show, I feel like we're going to get a satisfying end to it. And that is something to be happy about.
All right. So our season 7 countdown is going to go all the way up to the July 16, 2017 season premiere.
Bubba, as we always do, we have to do our Joffrey of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
This is the excitement people have been waiting for. As you know, last year, I believe my Joffrey of the Year was Donald Trump, and it proved to be true. But we can't always make it Donald Trump, so I'm going to go completely off the board.
Off the board.
And this week, my Joffrey of the Week is completely not in the political sphere at all. It is Jared Kushner. Because just like Joffrey, what you want to do is get in charge is you want to talk to the other leaders of other kingdoms and make a secret special pact with them so then you can take them down from within. In other words, you give all your power up to them and then you pervert them from within. And that is an extra level of sneakiness that rises to the level of Joffrey-ness.
Oh, man. What a great Joffrey of the Week. For me, Catfish, I'm going to go into the fictional arena.
Okay.
And that is my Joffrey of the Week. This is a spoiler for Alien Covenant.
Okay.
My Joffrey of the Week is Michael Fassbender's character, David, in that he has a goal and he moves for it with Joffrey-like precision. And come hell or high water, if you're in his way, you'll get Joffreyed. And if you've seen Alien Covenant, spoiler alert, they get Joffreyed real hard.
They do get Joffreyed real hard with a cleverness.
Yeah, Joffrey Clever.
Joffrey Clever. Wow, that is amazing.
David the Android in Alien Covenant brings what I like to call Double J.
Double J.
He brings Joffrey Justice to the Covenant.
He really does. He really does. And narrows it down. Because in the end, what do you really need? Double J.
Double J.
Just Joffrey. Oh.
Spoilers there. So, everybody, please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublep podcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcast, plural, facebook.com/doublep podcast. Like the page, share our Facebook posts, retweet us, and we want you to be eligible to win these prizes as we count down.
Some amazing prizes.
Amen.
I mean, special, special prizes.
My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitTenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I'm Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67.
And you'll hear us next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
I'm telling mother.
And we are up. God, it's been so long. How do we even start the show?
It's welcome to The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Welcome to
the Joffrey of Podcasts.
Is that how it starts?
Yes.
Welcome to The Joffrey Podcast. Then I say, my name's Bubba.
Yeah. Well, you want to listen to one?
Yeah, listen.
I'm telling you, we start off by saying, welcome to the Joffrey. You do too many of these.
Welcome to, and then we're together, the Joffrey of...
Yeah, you say welcome to, and I say...